Hello and welcome to my hearth. And here we are at the Creative Storytelling Podcast, episode 4 already. And it's another in the series of Be Careful What You Wish For. A friend of mine asked me why I'd decided to start with that particular thread. And I think it's because it's one of the basic stories, somebody wishing for something or wanting something. And therefore, it's going to be a very good inspiration for all sorts of different kinds of storytelling. It goes across all sorts of ethnicities and cultures. They have creatures who can grant you wishes. Most famously, I suppose, the genie in Aladdin. In some civilizations, jinns can grant stories. As I said in an earlier podcast, it's amazing when you decide to do something, how suddenly things click out at you. I was watching an episode of the Netflix series, The Witcher, and there was a whole episode about a djinn granting three wishes to people and the havoc that it caused. And I suppose that's another interesting thing, isn't it? These wishes always cause havocs because things go wrong. Anyway, we were looking at the story of Agamemnon and what happened to him at the time of the Trojan Wars. He's left Troy and he's going back home to be king again in the house of Atreus. And he's taken with him Cassandra, the soothsayer. Again, a very useful connection to be careful what you wish for, because soothsayers are also connected to that whole idea of fortune telling and what's my future going to be, prophecy and all kinds of things. And if you remember, the problem with poor Cassandra was that although she'd been given the gift of prophecy, nobody believed her, which must have been incredibly frustrating. But also, she was telling the truth, and people didn't heed the various warnings that she gave them. Okay, so they're heading for home. Let's cross over to Agamemnon's home and see what's been happening to his family. Now, remember, when he left Greece for Troy, he went through that terribly traumatic thing of his daughter coming to wish him off, Iphigenia, and he has to sacrifice her to the god Poseidon. So from his wife Clytemnestra's point of view, he's gone off. In the process, he kills their daughter, and she doesn't hear from him for 10 years. And all the people back at Greece think that the Greek army has perished in the Trojan War. She has taken a lover called Aegisthus, and we're going again into one of those basic stories of someone going away, the person thinking they're dead, then taking another partner, and then we've got the person coming back. And that, of course, is going to create a dilemma, you know. And all the Greek dilemmas always ask the question, if you were faced with that, what would you do? How are you going to deal with it? Do you have an understanding of the morality behind it? You know, are you going to be led by your head or your heart? Which of the gods is going to be in control of your decisions? All of those things are incredibly rich from a storytelling point of view. Anyway, not only does Agamemnon come back, first dilemma, but he brings with him a young and beautiful princess, Cassandra, which is obviously not going to please his wife. She, as I say, has already got this other lover. What are they going to do? So, to cut a long story short, what happens is that Aegisthus and Clytemnestra actually kill Agamemnon and Cassandra. Okay, now that sets up a whole sequence of events, because in the Greek view, if somebody is killed, there has to be some kind of revenge for it. There has to be a punishment for the murder. Murder is one of the big things in all civilizations, but especially for the Greeks. It needed retribution. If you weren't going to do it, then the gods themselves had a whole tribe of creatures, the Furies, that's the Latin term for them, the Eumenides, as they're called in Greek, and they are, as it were, the creatures who are going to avenge the murder of somebody. And it's pretty dramatic and violent in what they do. And obviously there'd be a punishment for you in the afterlife because of what has been done on Earth. Okay, so all of this clicks in. Clytemnestra has killed her husband and Cassandra. Yeah, not only that, of course, she has killed a king. And that's a big thing. So she and Aegisthus are now ruling in the place of Agamemnon. Now, who should do the revenge for Agamemnon on Clytemnestra? Well, following all the lines of family in the ancient Greek stories, it should be a close relative. They have three children. Iphigenia, we've already heard about. They think she's dead. She isn't, in fact, dead. She was translated by Poseidon to another island. And she's still alive, but she doesn't know who she is. They then have Electra, who is their elder, who is their other daughter. She's an elder child to Orestes, the brother, the son. Okay, so Electra could do it, but Electra feels that Orestes, the son, should do it. Because in effect, all things being equal, he should really be king. Now, I hope that bells are ringing in your heads at this moment, because you're thinking, hang on a minute, a queen has taken a lover and murdered a king, and his son should avenge him. We're sort of dealing with the story of a well-known Shakespeare play here, Hamlet. It's never clear how Shakespeare would have known about this story. He could have studied it when he went to school, but he must have heard about it, and certainly he must have heard about the play that was made of the story in the Oresteia, the trilogy of plays about the house of Agamemnon, because there are lots of similarities, especially at the beginning of the play, with Hamlet. Now, what's going to happen, of course, is made complicated by the fact that Orestes is away. And like Hamlet, he's away studying. It's Electra who persuades him to come home to avenge the death of their father. Now, there are various versions of the story. In one version, he comes back to the house of Atreus's palace. There's another story where Electra has been married off to a peasant, and he visits her in disguise there. Orestes visits her in disguise, and they hatch the plot that way. But whichever version you follow, it's then decided by him that he is going to avenge his father. Now, that's a problem, because he realises, of course, very quickly, that if he's going to avenge his father, that will include the death of his mother. And that's matricide, and that's another big thing that will happen. Okay, so from a storytelling point of view, we're going into kind of big soap opera land here, aren't we? We're going into those big epic stories. We're almost like the Godfather here. We're almost like a kind of mafia story of revenge and counter-revenge going on. We're like Jacobean revenge tragedy here. And all of this has come from the stories of the Greeks, which is why these ideas are so important, because they thread through our lives. They become the tapestry of what we watch. What's he going to do? Now, he has some discussions with himself about this, like Hamlet. Now, of course, the exciting thing about Hamlet is that Hamlet can't do it for such a long period of time. Orestes doesn't go through all of the circumlocutions, as it were, that Hamlet does. In fact, he acts quite quickly. In one of the stories, psychologically, and this is important, he kills both Aegisthus and Clytemnestra in exactly the same place and with exactly the same weapon as they killed his father. So there's a kind of completion of a story, an ironic, a dramatic irony here, a completion of what's happened before, and that gets done. Now, in one of the stories as well, Electra can't deal with this whole problem of her father's death, and in fact gets so excited that she drops down dead. Now, the problem is that Orestes has not only killed his mother, which is big, but murdered a queen. And that, again, is very, very big. So what's going to happen here? What we're going to do? There's got to be some kind of revenge. Now, Iphigenia can't do it. Certainly in lots of stories, lots of versions of the story, Electra can't do it. So the Eumenides are going to click in, the revenging spirits, the revenging spiritual animals that are going to come. They're winged. They're like, they've got heads of women. They've got bodies of eagles. I suppose they look a little bit like a flying sphinx, which is quite an interesting idea. They're going to click in, but Orestes then asks for a trial from the gods. Now, a lot of Greek heroes are allowed to do that. They want to put their case as to the reason why all of these things should have been done, because what they're basically saying is that, well, this is what I had to do. I had to avenge my father. I know that involved the killing of my mother, but if I didn't avenge my father, I would be in trouble. You know, now I've killed my mother, I'm also in trouble. So what am I going to do? And what happens is there is a trial, and the votes for guilty and not guilty are equal. There's no defined judgment. There's been a whole discussion about the fact that one of the reasons why Clytemnestra killed Agamemnon is because she thinks he killed the daughter. But in fact, and this is a kind of let-out clause for Orestes, Iphigenia is not dead. Now, that's a typical Greek storytelling device, which we all like. we think something has happened, and in fact it hasn't. And we do all of our actions on that assumption that something has happened, when in fact it hasn't. It's a kind of storytelling lie that is being perpetuated, and people act on that. But in fact, Iphigenia is still alive. And in one version of the story, Orestes then travels to the place where Iphigenia is, and they are reconciled. And she is revealed, and she gets her memory back and goes with him. And so we get a proper resolution of the whole story. You can see the layers of storytelling that are happening here, that are coming out of a complicated plot, but it's a very straightforward plot in one sense, is that there is an action and a reaction. Something happens and people have to respond to it. Anyway, that's a very good example of be careful what you wish for, and there being a completion for a whole group of people, in this case, a family, and other basics, one of the basics of storytelling. Good.